Hey guys, Crash here. This is going to be one of our bonus interview episodes. I had a great time recording with my friend Nicole the other day. She's an artist, a motorcycle safety instructor, just an all-around badass. So please, listen to her stuff. Go check out her website. See what she's up to. She was super fun to talk to. I hope you guys have as much fun listening as she and I did recording. So with that said, here's Nicole. All right, Crash here with Nicole Andrzejowskis. Motorcycle instructor or motorcycle safety instructor and artist and all around fun person. So how's it going?
Good. Safety part is new.
Yeah.
that's a whole learning curve.
Yeah.
But
you paint things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically anything that one could paint. It seems like canvases and helmets and tanks and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I can't think of anything I haven't painted other than I was going to say bodies, but I think I've done that in college.
Yeah.
But that's not something I would advertise that I actually do
right
now.
It's not on your resume.
No.
Or on your, if you have a website, it's not like, hey, I will paint your body if you want. No,
just tanks and helmets are kind of newer. I'd say like in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been riding motorcycles close to 16 years now.
Wow.
And I was always encouraged to paint tanks and helmets a while ago, but it was intimidating to me because, I mean, I've been painting longer than I've been riding motorcycles and in a traditional sense of going to art school and paint, like stretching canvases and painting those and then becoming a mural painter and having my own business.
Yeah.
But I think I was intimidated by helmets and tanks because I just didn't know what material, like the different kinds of paints.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talked to people that were automotive painters,
right,
if that's the correct term, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
they
people that paint cars.
Yeah car painters.
Yeah.
They made it sound really intimidating because they're like, well, you have to have the right chemicals and the right paints that match up with the auto body paint and then the clears. And it was just out of my wheelhouse,
right?
And so I just sort of avoided it, but then eventually I was like, fuck it, I want to paint my tank.
Sure.
I hated the decals on the side, so I found somebody that knew how to remove the clear and the decals and give it back to me. And so my tank was the first tank I painted, and then people were into it.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Thanks.
That one peach really looks like a butt.
It does.
That bottom one.
I kind of saw that happening when I was doing it. I love peaches.
Yeah, I mean, peaches look like butts already, so it's not
I mean, there's the peach emoji that is synonymous for a butt.
Right. And I apologize to anyone listening. I'm trying to very quietly open a mint.
Nope.
But I'm failing, so I'm just going to go for it and be loud for
a
second.
Just
get it all out as quick as possible.
It's kind of a difficult mint to tear into.
The wrapper is like coming apart.
I'll just match you and take a loud drink of my bubbly water.
Yeah. All right. Because anybody that's been listening lately knows I have a cold and I've been coughing a lot. So.
Aww,
all right. So yeah, back to the butt peach.
Yeah. Important stuff.
It is very important.
Yeah. I get that a lot, actually. People will like touch it and like, it was so unintentional, but when I was doing it, I was like, that does look like a butt. And then I was like, well, I'm going to go with it, you know?
Yeah.
Butts. I like butts, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Peaches and butts.
Yeah.
So, worked out.
So you were kind of intimidated by the whole special kinds of chemicals and paints and stuff. Did you end up just kind of saying screw it and painting it the way you knew how to paint, or?
Yeah, well, I was living in Portland at the time, and there was conveniently a sign store that sold enamel paints, and they sold One Shot and House of Color, and the dude that was helping me strip it and clear it told me to get House of Color, and those tiny little tins are pretty expensive. Like, each paint is like $20 to $24.
Yeah.
And so I bought, seven different colors, and I was like, I'm just going to go for it. And when I was doing it, I have learned to paint. Like, when I paint on canvas, I generally work in oil paints.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of paint that you have to usually wait for each layer to dry, and then you add on and you keep building up. Versus when I paint with acrylics, I am usually doing a mural, or if I'm painting on denim or, any type of like cloth, I'll use acrylic, and that dries super fast. So you can like mix it and paint as you go, and it's pretty satisfying. It works out. But with this enamel, it was like painting with nail polish, because every time I painted on top of it, it took that last layer away.
Yeah.
And it was really frustrating because I was like painting to the degree of like being super meticulous and wanting to make it perfect. And it just kept messing up. Right. So I eventually had to like do a lot of like soft strokes, wait for that layer to dry, and then go in again soft. So you can see actually each brush stroke in there. So it's not how I would have originally done it, but it worked out. So.
It looks really good. The things that I have seen that you have painted, which, you know, was the helmet at the OG show. Mm-hmm. I posted a picture of that on our show's Instagram, and then I've seen your tank now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like any other power sports industry paint job I've ever seen.
There's no flames.
Like, well, not just that. I don't even necessarily mean the content. I mean the process by which it was made doesn't look like. However, I don't know how anybody else would paint that. If I gave your, you know, a picture of your tank and I said, hey, will you produce something this just like this and put it on my tank? I don't know how another person would go about it, but the way that yours looks doesn't look like anything else I've ever seen. Even if I've seen something extremely detailed where like they painted a face or whatever on a tank, or even if you go like you were just at the Hippie Killer thing, all those like van, you know, paint jobs that like your artwork doesn't look like that. Not just, it just like even like the method it was done in. It has a really interesting look. This like, I think is like pretty unique.
Yeah, I agree. That's kind of what I'm going for.
Yeah.
And thank you. I feel like what the feedback that I get is usually, first people ask me if I did it with airbrush and I say no.
And maybe that's why it looks so different. Cause a lot of those like van paint jobs or like the tailgate paint jobs you see on like lowrider trucks and stuff are airbrushed.
Yeah. I think airbrush is kind of, from what I gather, cause I've never done it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a more user-friendly tool. Like more people can use that. But what I know is paintbrush, like painting. I mean, that's what I was like, went to school for.
Sure.
And it does take longer and it doesn't yield as much of, I don't know why I'm looking at that. I'm just
in
my own world. But
for everybody that's not here, can't see, like we're sitting in your like living room and your motorcycle helmets are up on a shelf nearby, which you have painted on. So
I'm just thinking off in space because I'm thinking about what happened this weekend, which was that I got asked that a lot, you know, like, why don't you use airbrush? Or I'm like, yep, somebody just gifted me one. I just haven't taken it out of the box yet. I've been busy with commissions and, you know, these shows and just sort of hustling and doing a bunch of things that I know how to do. And I really want to experiment with it, but I need to set aside some time to do that. And so I think doing it with a paintbrush takes longer, but it's familiar to me and it yields the results that I want. You know what I mean?
And they don't look airbrushed. It's a very different look.
Yeah. I really want to get in there though with that. And I think that's why it's so user-friendly is because people who weren't necessarily trained in, you know, like making art, they can figure it out. And like, for example, I was at that Hippie Killer Hoedown and there's two huge walls that they built about 8 foot by 8 foot each. And they were butt up against each other. And I'm sitting there painting like a face cutout thing.
Yeah.
I'd come the day before and put in about 4.5 hours or so.
Yeah, you painted this big skull where the eyes were sort of like where people could stick their faces to take pictures.
Yep.
And then there was like design around the skull.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they also wanted an element this year of live painting. Mm-hmm. So on the other side, these two guys came. I think they're, one was a tattooer and one is another artist. And they brought spray cans, you know, like graffiti art, and they were done in an hour. And I was like, they'd come over and tease me and be like, "Oh, you're still going, huh?
You're like, over there, like."
I mean, I was painting my heart out. I was going so fast, but like that plywood just soaks it up, you know. So I'm just like, oh, God. And I want it obviously at a level that's something I can be proud of. Like I didn't want to just slap it on there. So it was for about 8.5 hours of painting. Like I feel like. Because I had to finish it up so people could use it, you know? Right. So, like, I was satisfied with it.
It looked really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it was the first time I'd done a face cutout, and I love making art that people can participate with.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting for me. That was the first time that happened. But I was starting to you know, think about, like, I need to expand my wheelhouse, like, as far as learning airbrush or, you know, graffiti.
One thing I think, thinking about your, like, your helmets that are right here and your gas tank, and the helmet that you did for the OG show, it, when I've seen airbrushed things, they're very flat. Like, their appearance is extremely two-dimensional. It like, looks like it is the material that it is painted onto, you know? And yours looks like it's clearly a paint on top of a material. Yeah. Like, so your design on your tank is, like, it feels more three-dimensional because it feels like the artwork is kind of, like, painstakingly laid on top of the tank instead of, like, the artwork is the tank, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I know what you're saying. Like, there's, like, a human touch to it. Like, there's...
Yeah.
I feel like... I mean, I don't have... I'm not, like, hard up in one corner about any technique because I really love and appreciate art of all kinds. I really am into what I do because I don't see it in the motorcycle, you know, realm and all the different scenes that much. And so it feels exciting for me to be doing something different. And I think it's new, but I mean, everybody's an artist. So it's hard to say that I'm like the only person doing anything.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah. But
at the same time, like it seems relatively new to me too. Like I didn't, when you said you had painted helmets, so you and I ran into each other kind of in the beer garden area of the OG show. And then you're like, yeah, I have a helmet in the art exhibit. And I had not walked in there yet. So we made our way over there. And all the helmets looked really cool.
Yeah, there were some good ones in there.
Yours was definitely the least like the others, I think.
I agree with that.
Like, there wasn't a lot of metallic either. You know, like, your artwork isn't... Like, a lot of car art has metallic paints in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and yours is not metallic, you know, you don't, there's no metal flake or, you know, metallic going on there.
I feel like, I mean, I love that look, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's really important to, you know, whatever any artist does is what feels natural to them, I assume. And this, for me, making art like that, where it's, you know, I'm painting by hand, you can see, like, it's... It's man-made, woman-made in this case.
Yeah.
That, and there's, it's, I'm basically transferring the skills I've learned from canvas and walls onto a three-dimensional object.
Mm-hmm.
And not much has really changed other than that. I mean, it's just a different paint, a different object. And I'm painting, you know, mostly flowers, snakes, reptiles, and foliage. And
butts.
And... Fruit butts.
Fruit butts, yeah. Specifically. Peach butts.
I'm going to have to start painting more butts into my theme. I think, like, that's work, what we should have introduced this as, is Nicole, motorcycle enthusiast, safety instructor, painter of butts.
Painter of butts, yeah.
Butt painter.
Yeah.
That could be in different ways. Right,
people could think
ways.
That you paint on butts. Or
I'll
that
paint
you,
a butt.
You should paint a butt like a peach. So it's
a butt, you know,
like a butt emoji.
I'm gonna have to
on a butt.
Change my business cards now.
Change, yeah.
Just like
Nicole and Jaskis, butt painter.
Or that could take, that could be in a lot of different directions. What would be like a good mashup? Like, you have a mashup for your name.
Oh yeah.
So like, painter.
Yeah.
That sounds weird. No. What word?
Yeah.
I have to.
We didn't want to think about that one.
Get a bar napkin and just start going at it. There. Like, what has the word ass in it?
Everything. I'm in the Navy.
Yeah. That's, I don't know. That probably wouldn't help me.
Seeing your tank and then you're seeing the helmet, and then I come into your house, or your apartment, whatever, and like the snake up on the wall and all that. I was like, oh, this is totally like you have a style. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a specific aesthetic that you kind of like paint in, you know, having seen the stuff you posted on Instagram, which for those of you eagerly waiting to find her on Instagram, we'll get there.
So eager.
Like, well, where can I see your stuff? Do you have it? So I'm really excited to see you like play with the airbrush because, you know, like, you're your style combined with the ease of using an airbrush, I think would be really interesting. And it'd make it so much easier for you to paint butts.
I know. I can't tell if it's like one of those foods that you are scared to try because it'll be gross, or if like you've been missing out this whole time, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think I'm just like procrastinating on it a little bit.
Maybe.
I'm a little nervous.
So transitioning a little. Oh, well, actually, before we do that, you, right after the OG show, you posted a few things to your Instagram story about art in general.
Yes.
Sort of like evangelizing the purchase of art and sort of like explaining why. Would you mind talking through some of those things with me now?
Yeah, totally.
Like, so why should I go buy art?
So that's, I'm glad you asked, because this is part of something that's new for me as far as becoming a freelance artist full time. You know, the motorcycle instruction is pretty new, but I just decided I've been making art for years and doing it like before and after my other jobs. And as I've become, I asked myself after teaching fifth and sixth grades, putting in 60 hours a work week and not totally loving it and just feeling
That's
really...
That's because children are monsters. I have two of them. They're awful.
They're really, they're draining, you know? And and so I feel like if I've been able to
love them, but...
That's why I'm an aunt.
Yeah. I love mine, but I hate all the others.
That sounds like you're spoken like a true parent.
Yep. I never liked children before, and now I like 2 to 4 children.
Okay.
That's
okay.
It's about my limit.
You're allowed. It's okay. Just, you know. Anyway, I decided that if I was putting that much time into that and other people's children, I'm either going to, one, have my own kids and raise good humans instead of helping to raise everybody else's humans.
I mean, yeah.
Teaching is a very selfless profession. And I know you hear it all the time, but it's you're wearing so many hats. It's incredible. But, or two, I was going to do what I love and put that same effort into that. And that's what I decided to do. So as I started learning more about, I realized I have to put a lot of marketing effort into, you know, selling artwork, because people do approach me a lot and that's super flattering, but I didn't know a lot about marketing. And I went to a talk here in San Diego about how to make it as an artist. And I got a lot of helpful tips because there was a panel of artists and it was in a collective, and I took away a couple good tips, as far as helping other, like helping people, like help make it easy for them to buy your art, making how-to videos of here's how you can go to my, you know, Etsy page or my website, click on this link, make it like basically like a quick 1 minute tutorial. And that's on my list to do. In the meantime, I started thinking about other ways, like creating a need. It's just like basic business economics, you know, like create the need and then like explain to people why they need to do this. And for me, coming from a place of like my survival is on this, like I feel like it's really important for people to know that, you know, putting money towards artists, it validates us, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, that was one of the reasons. I think I right now have like 12 or 13, I'm not sure how many reasons are up there.
Had quite a few,
but it felt like it was really important to sort of bring the conversation to light. And I don't know how many people are reading it, but I did get a lot of valuable feedback. And
yeah, I know one of the things you kind of mentioned, especially right in the beginning, was like, if I have $100, I could go spend that $100 on any one of a million things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really high likelihood that if I'm just going to go spend $100, I could just go down to the bar and drink that $100 in like 10 minutes.
Sure.
And then what would I have for that? I would have a hangover and I would have no value really gotten. Maybe
and
some
a beer belly.
Yeah, a hangover, a beer belly, maybe some memories. If I spent that $100 wisely enough at the bar, I might not even have any memories.
Lord.
You know?
Yeah.
but if I went and I spent $100 on a small, even like a small piece of artwork, I'll get to have that forever.
Yeah.
And especially if I get something that like speaks to me in a way that's not just like, I don't know, I'm going to buy this thing. But like if I find something that really, like something about it grabs me, then I'll get to look back at that years later and remember what it was I felt then or see how it affects me now.
Absolutely. I mean, you can grow with a piece of art, you know, like as you grow and evolve as a human, you can either, you know, reflect on the purchase you made. And it's similar to tattoos, like we were talking about earlier, it helps remind you of where you were at either at that point in your life or, you know, maybe the art has changed meaning for you. I bought a piece last year when I moved here, and whenever I look at it on the wall, I don't buy a lot of art. I think I do a lot of trades. I'll like make a painting and, you know, and get a tattoo for it or something like that. And that's art. And it's another form also.
For sure.
And I love doing that. That's like my preferred, I like a barter system with art. And I think a lot of artists feel that way where you can trade art because it's sort of invaluable sometimes when, you know, with other artists to like pay them money too, because everybody's art is different, takes different times, that kind of thing. But, like, when I look at the art that I bought last year, I still love it. I think about it, like, what it means, and it serves as a reminder of how I felt, like, how I've related to that.
Yeah.
I mean, there you can blow your money on crap. Like, there's so much crap you can blow your money on. But I feel like when you buy art, it's such an honest and sincere purchase, you know? Yeah. Because it has meaning. It's not just thoughtless and... You know, you're participating in somebody's process.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody buys my art or reaches out to me, I mean, it's definitely a small ego trip. You know, it's super flattering. Sure, yeah. And like, but who doesn't love that? It makes you feel good. Like your cup feels full, you know, and it makes me feel like I'm on the right path. Especially when they buy something I've made that I wanted to make on my own. You know, I love collaborating. Yeah. Like, what are your ideas? Let's make this work. Like, how about I throw this? And, you know, there's a lot of trust on their part that, you know, they see what I do. But when I make a piece of artwork that I made just independently, it's like, they don't even have to buy it and like it for the same reasons that I made it.
Yeah.
But it's rad because they looked at it, felt something, paid for it.
Yeah.
And then now they get to live with something that it was like a thought. It was just like, they're living with one of my personal thoughts.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's sort of the,
that's a really cool exchange.
Yeah. And it's one of the only sort of like, I don't know the only, but it's one of the few like really personal interactions we can have with each other. Like from an artist who put something of themselves into whatever this is. And then to have someone, you know, keep that piece of them in their home.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like, I totally agree. It's not like it's just like, I mean, some ideas come faster and some ideas take some cultivation. And, you know, some ideas I've been working on for years and, you know, whatnot. It's not like I have a machine. I'm not an idea machine, you know, like I think... Advertising and graphic designers generally have a good concept because there's a specific goal in mind of like what they want to achieve. You know, like we want to reach this audience. Yeah. And
there are usually constraints as well.
Of course.
To keep that within, you know, a budget and within like a certain sort of like format. Like we need an image that is this high by this high and by this wide. And
totally.
You know.
And that's a cool challenge on its own, too. Like, I love projects like that, too. Like, when I make a t-shirt or a flyer or something like that, that's fun. I mean, my favorite of all the jobs is murals, hands down.
Yeah.
You know, I love painting big. It's, like, instant gratification.
And I have a wall for you.
Really?
Maybe.
Oh, yes.
I might have a wall for you.
I love murals. That was my first love, like, my first dream job. When I was in school... getting my BA and I worked at a coffee shop in San Francisco and it was just this little dirty coffee shop called the Sea Biscuit Cafe. And I mean, it was such a dirty coffee shop, but all the surfers, it was like 2 blocks from the beach. So all the surfers come in there, you know, all the painters in the morning. And I knew everyone. I mean, that's my hood. You know, if I could live anywhere, I'd probably try to move back there, but it's insanely expensive now.
Right.
But this woman would come in, her name is Alyssa. And she's this tall, blonde, super vivacious lady and had 2 little girls in tow, covered in paint constantly, like just paint on her pants. Like she used her pants as like her dry rag to like get paint off. And I was just like, what is this woman about? And I found out she was a mural painter, which is super, I would say it's a very rare, you don't see it a lot. You know, it's not right. like I'm going to be an accountant or an ophthalmologist or.
Yeah, there's probably more of them than there are mural painters.
Yeah. I mean, it's a trade that not a lot of people see or know how to wrap their minds around, especially with like pricing out things and like how it works. But I was in my last year of school, and I told her that being a mural painter was one of my dream jobs.
Yeah.
And I had never even painted a mural before, but I had painted really big on canvases and like really big canvases. And I was like, you know, it can't be that much different. So she was doing this business with her then husband, and they were working at middle schools in the neighborhood and in around the city. And they would, if they needed help, I was like, I'm happy to help. I don't care. Yeah. Like, you don't have to pay me. And I think they paid me in beer and I think maybe probably weed. I'd just get like high. And like, it was, I was so young. I was just like, this is awesome. You know, who needs money? And I would just go and do like the grunt work, you know, like smashing in the primer into the wall or whatever. And then they split up and she started hiring me and just paid me $10 an hour. And and I picked it up right away. And I was working with kids and just learning all those dynamics of how to delegate work and how to work across the wall and keeping things at the same pace.
Yeah.
And then she moved to Venice and she had some referrals and she gave them to me. And so I started my own business and
nice.
I loved it. I loved being my own boss. I loved hearing people's ideas.
Yeah.
And I think at some point, I mean, where I'm at now, I stopped doing that because 2008 happened and disposable income was really hard to come by.
Yeah.
So people were like,
yeah,
I can't afford a mural.
Right. Actually, I love that we're talking about murals in University Heights in San Diego, because there are two great murals, like a really short walk from here.
Which?
The like on Park. They're on either side of Park. One is the like squid and sharks mural right down the street from the stats.
Okay.
I'll just show you. And then if you haven't noticed them there,
I mean,
and then
there's, maybe.
And then there's a, like an, almost like a sea nymph painted on the side of Pot Pie.
Yep. That one I know. And I think I know the other one too.
Yeah, just up to, like, the street from there is a shark with like an orange hammerhead shark.
Yeah.
And like a purple shark.
There's so many good murals around here.
Yeah.
Like, Barrio Logan has a bunch.
Oh yeah.
Too.
Barrio Logan has some really good ones.
I don't know how to get like how that's my whole challenge again with marketing. Like, that's why I'm like me doing the Instagram thing with the reasons you need to buy art is sort of, what's the word? An experiment, you know, like before I started doing that, I pitched a question to people, like, you can ask a question and it's like, but, and I kept it open-ended, buying art is better than buying blank. And people sent all these responses back, like hookers and Taco Bell, and, you know, like, and a bunch of,
Whoa. I don't know about Taco Bell.
I mean, they
do insult
have
the Bell.
The Doritos logos tacos.
Right.
Pretty good. Really? Yes. Love it. No, everybody's, things are crazy for loving that.
When I lived up in Washington, they briefly had a shrimp taco.
I don't know. I mean,
it was like
fish.
It was a fried shrimp taco.
Okay.
And it was so good.
Where was this?
Up in Washington.
Okay, they might be more like, well, I don't know.
It was like a limited time. Like, they were doing one of those like test area things.
The Taco Bell test kitchen. Visiting that place is one of my personal goals.
Is it really?
Do you know of it? You know, you can go there.
No, like, I didn't know you could go. It's like close, isn't it?
It's like in LA, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Because they're from, like, the Bell Estate is like in Escondido or something.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, you know more about this thing.
The founder of Taco Bell, you know, it's called Taco Bell because his last name is Bell.
Really?
He was a Marine.
Really?
Yeah. When he got out of the Marines, he started this company that became Taco Bell, and the very first Taco Bell is here in San Diego.
Is it still here?
Yeah, so you can't get tacos from it because they built, it's a tiny little,
like a drive-thru or something.
Oh, not, you know, like the coffee shacks that you, like, pull up? It's kind of like that size.
Okay.
So it's in the parking lot of a current modern Taco Bell, but there's a big plaque on it that says like this is the site of the very this is the original Taco Bell. Yeah, here in San Diego. He was, I think he was stationed in either Miramar or Pendleton.
Like we should go have like flowers, like a vigil. I mean, not that it died. I mean, I don't know. I maybe just like
yeah. And then the estate that he built is like on in Temecula, on the way to Temecula or Escondido or something.
How do you know this?
I drove by it once.
You just were like, let's take a field trip.
Well, I was not on purpose. I was just driving along and there was a sign that said like Bell Estate. And I was like, Bell Estate? And the person I was in the car with was like, yeah, like from Taco Bell.
That's rad.
And I said,
that's not what I would have guessed ever.
Right. And then another friend of mine recently told me about the original Taco Bell because she was complaining because it gets in the way of their drive through line. the old building.
Of all things to complain about.
Well, the old building is like weirdly in like weirdly set in their parking lot. It's not, it gets in the way of like people trying to actually make it through the parking lot.
Okay.
And so if the line for the drive-thru gets long, you end up with people trying to come into the line from either side of the old building. And
yeah.
It confuses things.
Yeah.
And so she was complaining about it. And then I mentioned that Taco Bell started here and she goes, oh my goodness, there's a plaque on it. And so the next time she went, she's like, yeah, it's the first one.
Oh, rad. That's
awesome.
What's your favorite thing to get on the menu?
Ooh. They recently got rid of the cheesy potato burrito.
No, thank
that was
you.
My favorite thing before.
No, thank you.
Let's see. Now I'm a Cool Ranch Doritos taco fan.
All right.
Or double decker tacos because I like the vague. It's a soft shell taco with refried beans and then a hard shell taco.
I tried this.
And then the regular, you know, five ingredients that Taco Bell uses.
Dang, I feel like I tried that, but it wasn't like. In love with it.
What about you?
I feel like, okay, well, mine are pretty, like, basic staples. Because I think the first time I remember having Taco Bell, we were moving across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably, like, 6 or 7. And my parents just, like, we were in a motel room that night. And they brought back Taco Bell. And they gave me, when they had refried beans or pintos and cheese.
Yeah.
In, like, a small paper container.
Uh-huh.
With a spork.
Yeah.
And, like. I just thought that was the best darn thing. I just loved that. And then, so I ate that a lot. I don't get that anymore because I don't even know if it exists on
the menu. I don't know if they have it either.
It was such like a lunch lady thing to get or like a cafeteria thing to get. But I like a soft taco supreme.
Those are good.
And the nacho cheese Doritos Locos Tacos.
Yeah.
And then just nachos and cheese. You know? Pretty basic, but so satisfying.
I know we're off on a weird Taco Bell
tangent.
Now
I'm gonna go get Taco Bell after this.
Same here.
Damn it.
Do you remember when they had the chicken the taco that had chicken for the shell?
It was that sounds like a dark days Taco Bell.
For a few months, it was a taco. It was called the Naked Chicken Taco or something.
That is not good marketing, and I'm not a marketer.
Right. It had no actual like flour or corn shell. It was just a
like protein. Like they're just like we're Atkins.
Yeah, it was
friendly.
But it was fried.
Nope, not Atkins.
So it was like a U-shaped chicken piece that had like, you know, pounded out flat out of compressed processed chicken plywood.
Go on.
And then formed into a U, and then all the toppings that would normally go like lettuce, tomatoes, cheese, etc. were in the middle of it.
I mean, I get the concept, but when you say it was a U-shaped chicken,
Nope. The appetite goes right out the window.
Give me that U-shaped chicken, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I like just basics. Like, you know, just, it's like my fast food indulgence, I would say. That would be the one.
I think I associate the double-decker taco with a funny memory with my uncle.
Oh.
And that's why I like it so much. I mean, I like the soft tacos probably the most, but when the double-decker taco was released, I have this weird memory of being up in Wisconsin visiting some of my dad's side of the family. And my uncle just loves to say really odd things or like silly things.
That's what uncles do.
And yeah, he's the same guy that got me into motorcycles.
Awesome.
And so like we go to Taco Bell and he gets one of these tacos and he immediately was like, there's like no beans in this thing. Like, cause it's supposed to be a layer of beans between the soft and the hard shell.
It seems like that's a really important part.
Yeah. And he's like, I thought there was going to be like half a pound of beans in this thing. And he just like went off on a, like this like rant about the lack of beans. And I thought it was hilarious. And so I kind of associate these this Aww. Taco with this like funny memory of him.
I love that.
He came to visit me and my family when we lived in North Carolina. And we saw this like semi-truck cab and, you know, whatever, but not the trailer, mm-hmm. Pulling a very small boat, like a little outboard motor, mm-hmm. like you'd go fish on a pond kind of boat.
Real small.
And he goes, "Wow, it's amazing that little boat has enough power to push that thing down the road." And so somebody, cute. I think the girl I was dating or something was in the car at the time. And she looked at me and she's like, is he for real? Like, does he mean that? Because the way he delivers it is so deadpan. Like,
so dry.
Yeah, you have no idea that he's kidding.
I like your uncle. Yeah. He sounds like a good time.
Yeah, he's fun.
That's funny. I have a couple uncles like that, too.
Yeah.
But one of them rides, actually. He had a Harley shop when he was a teenager, so probably 60s.
Okay.
I think he was even associated with the Hell's Angels for a while because he has a tattoo that's a Hell's Angels tattoo, and you're not allowed to get those, I think, unless, you know, and it's super old.
Yeah.
But he's such a rad old dude, and now he rides a Valkyrie.
Oh.
And like a full-on trailer, cup holders, reverse.
Nice.
He's a super sweet dude, but we had a ride together years ago when I had a Honda... 1977 Honda 404, like a 400F, just okay, four-cylinder.
Yeah.
And they didn't make those bikes for very long, just a couple of years. And it's the first time I rode on the freeway, actually.
Yeah.
And I rode from San Francisco to Auburn, which is like a two-hour ride on the 80. He had ridden across the country from Maryland to Foothills. We met at my grandma's house. And we went on a ride the next day we just like did a whole day cruising, like him on the Valkyrie, me and my like little 400.
Yeah.
And went up to Tahoe and all around Tahoe.
Awesome.
And he bought me a new tire because it was super cracked. And like I ate a wiener dog. It was my first Coney dog. That was a Coney with the chili and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the first time I had that. So
nice.
I guess I would say if I had another Coney dog, I might think of Uncle Gary, but... I don't really like them.
Right. I love hot dogs.
God.
So much.
What's your preferred hot dog?
Oh, I like anything really. Like, not anything, but I really like to mix it up. Barrio Dog in Barrio Logan.
Oh, there's a dog place here?
There are so many.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, aside from Wiener Schnitzel, which is like the chain.
I've never been there.
The chain hot dog place, but... Barrio Dog is a, like, you know, only in Barrio Logan. They have, like, bacon-wrapped Tijuana-style hot dogs.
What?
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
They have, like, 7 or 8 hot dogs that are all just, like, they all have 8 or 9 things on them. You know, like, hot dog with pico de gallo and all kinds of stuff.
Are they like, girthy? Or are they, like, long and skinny dogs?
Kind of average, not like foot long.
That's cool. Okay. I guess I really care about the flavor of the dog.
Yeah.
You know, like Nathan's hot dogs, that brand is really good.
Yeah.
But
Doghouse,
it's just about the topping.
Yeah. Downtown Doghouse is they're a chain, but I don't know how big of a chain. There's one in Yuma, Arizona, but there's one here. And they're a similar, like, their flavor, like, they have a bunch of different styles of hot dog that they, I think they make them in-house.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, like, all kinds of toppings. You know, they have, like, a bunch of preset ones that all have kind of clever names. And then, or you can just...
Like, what's up, dog?
No, like they're named after, like, one of them's called the Scott Baioli.
Cheesy schnitzel. I don't know.
Yeah. One of them's called the Scott Baioli. Because it's...
Oh, yeah, those are very clever
names. Yeah, it's got aioli on it.
Oh, and it's like
nicknamed after Scott Baio. Yeah. I love hot dogs like a lot.
All right. I get the message. All right, so let me ask you this. If you were can you say hot dog flavor?
Sure.
Like, what would you be? Like,
is this like a... This Saturday Night
this
Live.
This is a dating app. Now yeah, we're on a right. date. What kind of hot dog would if you
I immediately think of the Will Ferrell doing the sports announcer name, who I can't remember.
Harry Carey.
Doing, if you're a hot dog,
oh,
would you
is
eat
he
yourself?
Doing
that?
Oh.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, he does. There's this whole Will
That's
Ferrell bit where he's
so
like,
good.
I know I would. I'd cover myself in mustard. I'd be delicious.
Like, I don't even know. I have no connection to that. Oh my god, maybe I have like buried memories.
Yeah,
of, like,
I would be
Will Ferrell's Harry Carey.
Like a boar's head hot dog with like the skin, like natural casing, chili, cheese, and sauerkraut.
Whoa.
Yep.
That's serious.
That's my go-to hot dog order. So that'd be me.
Nice. That's like respectable. That's
got
like
a little snap when you bite into it because it's got the natural casing.
Yeah. Now I'm getting it. Now I'm like getting back into it. I feel like after this conversation's over, I'm just going to go find the nearest fast food.
We're going to have a food binge, each of us separately, off in our own little world, just forking down hot dogs and Taco Bell.
Yeah. This is not a healthy podcast.
No.
It's not about health.
No. So back to the reason that we're here.
Yeah.
Which
let's
honestly
talk about
the
business stuff.
Yes. Very important.
Business stuff.
Like safety matters.
Yeah.
You recently became a motorcycle safety instructor.
Not to be confused with a cop. My friends are teasing me. They're like, whatever, narc.
Are you a cop?
You're still a cop now. I was like, look, I have to wear a reflective vest. It's true. Or a reflective jersey.
Like all the time?
When I'm teaching. No.
Okay.
Yeah, I sleep in it. I bathe in it. No. Just when I'm teaching. And
when I said all the time, I meant like anytime you're riding, go to the bathroom.
Yeah. I'm serious. I'm so serious about safety. So it's interesting. It's a kind of an interesting change of pace for me because I wouldn't say that I've been. What should I say? But I mean, for a couple years ago, I was like doing stunts on my bike, you know?
Sure.
I mean,
we've all had our moments where we were doing things that may not have been the smartest.
Right. And it was fun and like scared my family and friends. And everybody's like, sit down, Nicole. Sit.
Calm down.
I'm like, you guys, it's so easy. It's fine. Just stand on one leg. It's totally fine. You know, I got the control of the throttle. Like, this is fun. It's thrilling and whatever. And there's no, I'm not condemning anybody that wants to do it. Like, part of my other like dream job, like secret.
Mm-hmm.
Like in another lifetime, I always wanted to be a stuntwoman, you know?
Awesome.
I love going fast. I love doing anything that scares me a little bit, you know? And I think that's how I probably got into motorcycles. I just wanted to go fast. And I would ride without any gear. Like, I didn't know about gear. I was like with a bunch of knuckleheads that would ride mopeds. And then we all started riding Harleys. And then, you know, we were in a band and our motto was we ride to crash. And so it's
all right.
Completely. So we were just trying to be cool, you know?
Right.
It's so cool. So now it's just kind of, for me, it's the opposite of that. Like I was told I am a role model now and I can't, you know, ride without, unless I have all the right gear on. And so I'm slowly acquiring all the right gear. And
yeah.
I
am such a gear whore. I love motorcycle gear.
It's so important, though, you know?
So much. And I'm not even just, like, I mean, I really like stuff that is safe, but I really like stuff that looks good and
Well, we have that option now. I mean, more people are riding, and there's so many people and great brands that are making safety look cool, you know? I mean, and I also think there's, like, an element of maturity to it, you know?
Yeah.
After riding for so long, and then especially after I moved here a little over a year ago, just coming into having so many close calls, like got clipped by a car.
Oh yeah.
Had people pull out in front of me and had like dumped it because I had, like, hit the brakes, turn, like people changing lanes when I'm splitting and I have to like hit the brakes. I mean, all kinds, like a lot of close calls, more here than any of my other riding experiences. Like, I've definitely had those before, but
I had a moment today where I was lane splitting and I try to lane split within appropriate guidelines for lane splitting, you know, like not over 45 miles an hour, like of traffic.
Right.
I try to do it when traffic's going actually slow.
Yep.
And all those things. I had a moment where you know, those little dots they make that like for the lane lines,
like the raised.
Yeah, the little, yeah. whatever they're, those little reflectors that are just little dots. I hate that California both allows lane splitting and putting those dots on the ground. Because, you know, you're just like, if you're riding right down the middle. And things timed out just right, where I went between two cars that were a little close. I was going slow. Uh-huh. So, I mean, it felt like I was making a safe call. But I must have hit one of those dots at just the time when I felt like my saddlebag would be passing the car next to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, shit, did I just hit that car?
Yeah, that's
like,
I hate that feeling.
And then I look in my mirror and I don't see my saddlebag for a second. And I'm like, is it still there? And I reached down. It was right there. It's just my mirror wasn't tilted enough that I could see it. And I was just like, oh, crap, did my saddlebag just like pop off?
Yeah.
Like, nope, it's still there. Must have been one of those little dots on the road.
Yeah.
But I was terrified for a second that, like, the saddlebag had ripped off and was, like, bouncing down the freeway.
Right. Well, ultimately, it's also that, you know, if you hit that car, you're going to have to, there's going to be an interaction.
Yeah.
I mean, probably. I would assume, like, if you have to go back and get that saddlebag, person's car, driver's, I mean, I wouldn't be stoked if some motorcyclist hit my car, you know?
Right,
like,
absolutely.
It's irresponsible and it makes everybody else look bad, but.
I'm trying to think if I've had.
Ultimately,
anybody,
that's just
while I'm driving
unpleasant.
A car, I'm trying to think if I've had anybody clip my mirror with their mirror. Because my mirror is on
with
my...
With their motorcycle, you mean?
Yeah, when I had bar-end mirrors on my Bonneville...
Oh, those things are wide.
I've had them tap mirrors before.
Yeah.
But they folded in, and so if I didn't remember to fold them in, and I, like, tapped somebody's mirror, it was always a really low speed, very, like, barely tapped them, and it would always just push my mirror in, and... I wouldn't stop. I would just keep going. I'm like, you're fine.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I've ever had anybody, if I'm thinking if I've ever had anyone do that when I'm driving a car. And I think so. Cause on Coronado where I work, the lanes are narrow, like leaving the base. So like on 4th Avenue, like leaving the base, there's three lanes wide, but they're pretty tight.
Oh yeah. And everybody's trying to get on the bridge.
Yeah. So you've got just gridlock and then you're kind of filtering down through it. I'm pretty sure I've had a motorcyclist like clip my mirror, like my car mirror.
Mm-hmm.
But I've definitely done it on the Bonneville. And now if I do it on the Bonneville, I put these like really beefy hand guards on there. And if that thing ever comes in contact with somebody's mirror, that mirror is dead. Yeah. I'm going to have to stop.
Win.
I'm going to have to stop and apologize profusely and give them some money.
Yeah. That's like what I want to avoid at all costs. Yeah. I mean, like as far as safety off, when I'm not working, like going into this thing, I can't be cocky. Like, even though I've been riding for a long time, I'm still learning. And I think that's how everybody should continually look at who rides a motorcycle should continually look at it.
Yeah.
Because even after taking these classes, I had to do a certain amount of classes and training and, you know, certification and shadowing and blah, blah, blah. Like you just learn more as you go. And then I find myself applying it to my own riding experiences outside, like, because I don't have a car, so I ride my motorcycle everywhere.
Yeah.
And in that, like, you know, back to riding with my buddies where we rode to crash, like, they were just like, back brake, like, rear brake only. And I was like, yeah. And I didn't know that the front brake was 70% of your stop and car.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I was like, trained to think that it's more important to stop with your rear brake because you would rather skid your back tire than go over the handlebars.
Yeah.
And then I took this class and I started learning. I'm like, oh, only 30%. I'm like, that's nuts because one of my Harleys didn't even have a front brake.
Yeah.
And that rear brake was like so ground out that I had to get a new disc.
Yeah.
I mean, just thinking back to all the stupid habits I had, you know, it was like, it really puts it into perspective. And so I'm not trying to take away that thrilling element of riding a motorcycle because I still love going fast.
Yeah.
And I still love taking chances. But I do think, you know, that's what a track is for, like what somebody would say. Or, like, do it in a reasonable way. You know, like, I don't want to split lanes going generally over 45, even though the law says 30.
Yeah.
But then I've also heard it's up for debate because I just got pulled over on the Bay Bridge by a cop last week.
Yeah.
And And he pulled me over. I had no idea why he pulled me over. You know, I was splitting lanes, but there was slow traffic.
Yeah.
I wasn't going nuts. I was just, like, cruising.
Yeah.
And he pulled me over, and he said two things. Your plate is folded in, which seems like kind of a BS reason to pull somebody over, because I didn't even realize that. I was like, oh, somebody just, I was in the hate. Somebody probably just backed into it, and I didn't notice it. And he's like, also, why do you only have one mirror? I was like, he's like, I know it's legal. I was like, yeah, I had it inspected by the CHP last month. And he's like, you can't see. And he started kind of dadding me.
Yeah.
Which was really annoying. But I get that a lot. I think partially because I'm a woman, but yeah, also.
The mansplaining is real.
It was, I don't want to sound dramatic because I don't want to overuse that term.
Right.
But it was a mansplaining. He's like, why do you only have one mirror? And I was like, I just like it. He's like, oh, okay. Like, I don't even change lanes without looking over my shoulder anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the point of having those two mirrors? Like, I'm not going to rely on those. I'd rather look over my shoulder. But
yeah.
As far as lane splitting, he's like, it's not necessary to lane split here. And I was like, I mentioned that I was an instructor, and it was, like, in one ear and out the other. He didn't give a shit. So, it was, like, that whole lane splitting, I think the only default I have at this point, because everybody has an opinion about it, and it's technically caught up in legislation, so I don't know what's actually legal in California. I'm just going to default to 30 miles an hour at max, and you're only allowed to go 10 miles faster than the flow of traffic.
Right.
And when I was lane splitting, I thought I was doing it in a safe way. It was probably a little faster than 30, but I didn't think I was putting myself or anyone else at harm. So
I got a bit of a dad lecture from a... Was this cop a motorcycle cop, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't get a ticket, which was pretty rare
for a motorcycle cop. I got a speeding ticket and a dad lecture from a motorcycle cop in the rain last week.
What? You don't get both of those. You either get one or the other.
Yeah, I got the, like... You know, you're putting a lot of trust in the other drivers when you're out here, especially in the rain and riding the way you were. I was going 80 and a 65, which... Right. Is kind of what everybody in California does.
I mean, if you're going with the flow of traffic...
I was going a little faster than the flow of traffic, and that was why he pulled me over, is because I was definitely, like...
I mean, I can't condone it.
I'm not saying that I wasn't in the wrong.
Yeah.
But it was just funny to be like, here we are, me and you, both standing in the rain, on the side of the road. You're lecturing me like it's actually going to make a difference in my life. And now you're going to give me a ticket, but I'm just going to try to fight anyway.
Are you?
Yeah, I don't know if you've gotten very many speeding tickets in your life, but San Diego, there's a Mr. Ticket is a like local
Diego. I've seen the billboards.
Oh yeah, I've used the service.
I've gotten one speeding more than ticket, once. Like a year in a car years ago.
But yeah, it's.
I mean, here's the thing. It's like, don't be dumb. Like, I can't sit here and be like, don't do as I do as I say.
Right.
You know, yeah. I generally truly, sincerely feel like what I tell people when I'm teaching and even when I'm not teaching is like, just ride within your limits, you know? Don't be a jerk and, you know, follow the rules before you start getting... you know, ballsy.
Yeah,
you
know? And I was like, definitely...
Like, be more confident. Take some time. Take a couple of years. Do it at track or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
learn. Take some classes.
And there's no, like, end point. That's why I say it's always, like, you always can learn something. Like, I feel like if you think... One of these mottos, what is this? There's, like, a book here. It says, on the cover, it says, amateurs practice until they get it right. Professionals practice until they can't get it wrong. Which is basically, like, saying nobody's ever gonna... be a professional or whatever.
Yeah, or that you're always going to have to practice.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what.
Exactly. So I like that idea. I like that notion because just check yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not invincible.
So how did you, what made you want to become a motorcycle safety instructor?
I had a job all last year, like a full-time job, and it ended, and that's when I was like, I'm going to use this as a catalyst to do freelance like art full time, and it's been going really well. I did need to supplement my income, and it sort of fell in my lap. A friend of mine in Oakland is an instructor, and she had kind of tried to get me to sign up last year at a certain point. She's like, Nicole, you were a teacher, you know, like you love motorcycles. It makes sense. And I was like, yeah. And so she sent me a forward that a school was opening up in Chula Vista. And I just jumped on it, and, the school that hired me helped sponsor me through the program. I had to pay most of it, but they did supplement some of that.
Yeah.
And I just like filled out all the paperwork and got my resume. And I just kind of felt like it was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Like I love teaching. I didn't love teaching children.
Yeah.
But the actual teaching part was really exciting for me.
Right.
So now it's like a whole new, just a different level. Like I get to teach people that paid money to be there. First of all, like they want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just using my skill set in a new way, like a new area. And the classes are mostly men,
mm-hmm.
All ages. Sometimes there's a woman or two, and it's kind of interesting having that dynamic of I get to like teach something to a group of men, which is a different, it's like a role reversal in a way. Not that there's men always teaching a group of women something, but it feels pretty empowering.
Yeah.
And I like setting an example that like, you know, as a woman, we can do anything. We can do anything just like anybody can do.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So it feels personally satisfying.
Good. That's really awesome to hear.
Yeah.
I want to wrap things up because we're going kind of long. I'd love to have you on again sometime.
Yeah, this has been great.
Yeah, this has been super fun. We should be friends. But
nope.
All right, that's fine. before we go, you are Chicken and a Biscuit on Instagram.
Yep.
With underscores between all the words, right?
Yep.
Like the cracker, Chicken and a Biscuit.
Yep.
But
biscuit on the cracker is spelled
incorrectly. Right?
Incorrectly. I'm a teacher, so I have to
chicken
spell everything
in a
correctly.
Biscuit with everything spelled correctly.
Yes.
That's a way to find you. Your website is
NicoleArts.com.
Pretty simple. NicoleArts. That Nicole is common spelling.
Yeah. No H.
Right. Just, you're not Nick Hole. You're
thank you.
Nicole.
Justice for all the Nicoles without an H.
You're not Nichole.
No.
You're Nicole. So Nicole Arts, Chicken and a Biscuit. Is there anywhere else people can find your work?
I don't have any other social media platforms or stores. So I think that on the World Wide Web, that would be
That's
it.
Fair.
Yeah.
Would you like to put a plug in for your school that you work for? Or just tell people to go out and take a class wherever they are?
Yes, definitely take a class, even if you have your license already.
Yeah.
But if you are interested in taking a class from me, I teach at several different schools in San Diego, and I'm going to be starting to teach in the Bay Area and starting in June randomly. And that school is, I think it's Bay Area Motorcycle Training is what it's called.
Okay.
And then I'll be teaching, and I'm going to travel to teach in Pennsylvania this summer.
Cool.
They just got the bid for our curriculum. And
yeah, so you're, really quickly, you're doing the Total Control curriculum, right? Lee Parks?
Yep.
Not the Motorcycle Safety Foundation curriculum.
Correct. So it's Total Control. So you can hit me up on Instagram if you want to, like, find out what my schedule is.
Yeah, slide into them DMs.
Specifically sign up for my class. I mean, it's not like I have any special technique. I just follow the script.
Sure.
But I am
very
encouraging.
So. Yeah. That's good. Well, it was lovely having you. I hope everybody, you know, buys some art from somebody and hopefully reaches out to you and gets some art as well.
Yeah.
And goes out and takes a damn motorcycle class. Because even if you think you're awesome at it, you're probably not as awesome
as
you think. You are shit. but no, really, I love motorcycle training. And anybody that's listened to my show long enough has heard me gush about it. So.
Yeah, you can get pretty nerdy about it. Not you specifically, but
also me specifically.
Can. Okay.
So, thanks again. And with that, I think we're done.
Yeah, thanks.